Hey everyone, this is Cameron from Renegade Animation on RenegadePopCulture.com. If you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, and share out our episodes on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to us. We are everywhere. If you want to, consider supporting our Patreon. That way we can keep doing what we love, and that's talking about The Ghost and Molly Magee. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And yeah, it's about time we finally talk about the season two of The Ghost and Molly Magee. But before we get there, we have a really cool indie series that we want to shine the spotlight on this week. So, Cameron, why don't you describe Wheels and Roses?
So, this Kickstarter, as of recording this episode, just launched. It is by Orange Blossom Studios, which is founded by Pearl Lowe. And the pitch of the show itself is basically magical girl Sailor Moon with roller derby. That is such a fun idea that I'm shocked that we haven't seen something like that because magical girl stuff does well, and people love roller derby. So the story centers on our protagonist, Sahara, and her magical roller derby team, Wheels and Roses. Set in a world of magic, we follow Sahara, Danielle, Nina, Kai, and Bree as they learn what it means to grow as a team and overcome all odds to become the champions. So far, they just have a pitch trailer and what their overall goal is. They are aiming to make a 22-minute episode pilot. If they can't, they'll try to make maybe some shorts, maybe a graphic novel. But their main goal is to do what the animation industry should be, Hollywood in general, should be doing by making a world where we have diverse projects full of diverse cultures and characters. Apparently, Hollywood thinks otherwise, but that's a topic for another time. It looks really cute. I think it looks like a pilot with a lot of promise.
I like how she's bringing two worlds that kind of have similarities but are still kind of mostly separate genres and bring them together in a way that just sounds really cool.
Exactly. It looks fun. I decided to back it and you can too. It's the funding stops at the very end of February. So if you want to support the indie animation scene and you want to see more diverse projects get greenlit or made, you have to, well, put your money where your mouth is. So give them your money. This looks like a fun project. I can't wait to see what happens, and I hope the Kickstarter does well.
Yeah, same. I really hope this one sees the light of day because this might even inspire other creatives to pursue their passion as well.
And if you are curious, a lot of the team have actually worked in the animation industry from A24, Sony Animation, Cartoon Network, Powerhouse Animation, even anime studios like Studio MAPPA and Yokohama Animation Lab. So these people know what they're doing. Very killer crew and a killer premise. Give it your support. But now we must talk about Disney series The Ghost and Molly Magee.
Season two, we talked a little bit about it back when we interviewed Bill and Bob for the new Paranormal. Is the very first episode where we are introduced to the McGee's new neighbors, the Chens, who, as it turns out, to be a family of ghost hunters. And this episode does a great job of setting the tone for the rest of the season. I can say on the whole, season two doubles down on everything that I liked about season one. Take a lot more risks in terms of the story ideas, the comedic set pieces, the music. All of this just feels like everything we loved about the first season, but more.
So with this second season, I agree. I think they took everything that was great about the first season and then built upon it. We learned more about the ghost world, some of the culture aspects of that world, and we keep expanding on and progressing the bonds and friendships between the characters in Brighton. Molly grows as a character, her friends grow, and Scratch will get his own little section of this podcast because boy, howdy, was I not ready for the ultimate story arc for Scratch. And even though you can absolutely tell this show got cut short because they were in production of a third season, and then unfortunately, people who want to support animation don't actually support animation, and you can tell that the final episode was meant to be more of a closing for the overall series. But even with that said, at least they were able to get it done in time so it doesn't feel so abrupt, and that they were able to wrap up as much as they could. They weren't going to be able to do much else outside of that one last episode.
About that, I'll get my one negative out of the way is that because of how the show ended, there are some storylines that get much of a resolution, certain characters that end up unfortunately fading into the background. For the most part, I think this show or this season does a good job of giving a satisfying arc to our core cast of characters.
And I like that they kept building up on the side characters as well. I wish we had a little more time with Molly's other friends and, of course, for me, the mayor of Brighton, because, give me more Patton Oswalt.
Yes.
But they do focus on it where it counts, especially with Scratch's best friend, Jeff. In this season, there are two Jeffs because Jeff is in a afterlife relationship with another Jeff, but with a J. Them building up on Jeff, like expanding his character and his relationship with Jeff, is so sweet. I love that they took a mostly like silly side character and made him even more lovable.
The best thing about Jeff this season is that we got to meet his partner in probably one of my favorite episodes of the first half of the season, the afterlife of the party.
Oh, that was a funny episode, and how Jeff was like, okay, Jeff is a little more forgiving than I am, but if you mess with him again, I will end you. I love the edge that they gave him. Another aspect I like about it, how they expand upon the cast, is that Andrea was less of like the snooty rich girl. She is snooty and a rich girl because her parents basically run essentially the city version of Amazon. Well, especially in one episode, which is all about the importance of supporting small businesses over companies like Amazon. But she's like not bitter or mean about her antics. She's just in her own little world. And within that one episode where she has to basically rebrand or reinvent herself or really show her true colors. And I like that. We didn't need to have an angsty, bitter, quote-unquote friend. She is an actual friend. It's not just Libby as Molly's only friend. Andrea becomes more of a friend as the second season goes on. And I think that's cool. When do you ever actually get to see something like that? And it's a step up from where we started with like Gravity Falls having the kind of reluctant best friend, rival friend, I guess, with Pacifica in that show. And then with this one, you don't ever get that sense of like, okay, why are you friends with Molly? And Molly, why are you giving her the time of day?
Yeah, no, this time they really go out of their way to completely destroy that stereotype and turn Andrea into more of a three-dimensional character.
And with the family members, I got a better feeling of who they are as individuals. I love Sharon, probably one of the best moms in Disney animation, where like they focus on stuff like she had a a music career that she wanted to tackle and also art, but was too afraid to after finding years and years upon excuses to not, go after said art. But then when she finally has time to, she's like, ah, I don't know. Pete became a more lovable dad character, very supportive, definitely nowhere in the realm of worst TV dads. Because sometimes with Disney, it's a gamble of who you get as a good TV dad.
One thing I like about this show is how it allows every character to be, to A, be a character, but B, specifically with the parents, they get to be more human and not just vessels for the moral of a particular episode. And sure, I'm not saying this show doesn't have good morals. Oh no, it has plenty of them, but it's great that even the parents have lessons to learn and can get into their own hijinks, like the episode where Pete becomes a TikTok celebrity
Right.
and lets all that fame go to his head.
Yeah, it loses the point that you were using TikTok to talk about important problems within the city, but then the fame took over. Daryl kind of maybe gets the short end of the stick of the character development, but I do like that he's not just a chaos maker. I mean, he is, but they've leveled him out a little so where he's not just the worst little brother you've ever seen.
I've always kind of liked Daryl being the most chaotic member of the family, but like you said, they made him a little bit more three-dimensional, and he actually gets more involved in the overarching narrative of the show, which is nice.
I enjoy the aspect of how they combine the human activities and the ghost activities with the fact that we now have a new family to deal with, the Chins, and how they're kind of a threat, but they're also not a threat at all. It's interesting to see how their obsession with ghost hunting spun from a honest misunderstanding when you realize that of all the characters to cause mischief and a streak of revenge, Jeff was the reason why the Chen started ghost hunting.
When I got to that episode and got to that reveal, I seriously just broke out laughing. Like, are you serious? This is where it all began.
Yeah, it wasn't just because Jeff scared the father. It's because it was a misunderstanding of some dust getting in Jeff's face. I like the Chin family. Of course, I would have loved to see them more or have more of an arc than just the family that hates ghosts. I get it. At first, they are the polar opposite of the McGees, where the McGees love the fact that they have a ghost in the house and they love ghosts, but the Chins don't. But then they wrap that up around by the end of the season. But a lot of it is stretched out with, I think, like the Halloween episode finally bringing in Ollie onto the level of Molly, where he finds out, like, oh, wait, ghosts aren't all bad. There are bad ghosts, but Scratch ain't one of them.
I have some conflicting thoughts about the Chens as, I guess, a pseudo antagonist. On the one hand, it is kind of funny how you have to have, in a series like this, you kind of have to have that sort of comedic foil who just kind of has their own little subplot going on in the background. But because of the nature of the people of this town, nobody takes them seriously. On the other hand, I think they handled their arc well enough. And Ollie was someone, when he was first introduced, I'm like, oh great, here we go, another example of like the dating Catwoman trope where the main character thinks he or she has found their soulmate until it turns out they're secretly the enemy. But by the Halloween episode, that's when I really started to warm up to him.
The problem is that the family doesn't show up a lot. It's mostly Ollie. And that's a shame because Juniper Chen has really good chemistry with Daryl. And I would have loved to have seen the parents bond more. They more imply that they bond off screen than they do. Maybe that's just because of what happened with the production. I'm not going to make this all about the fact that this show got shorthanded, but I wanted to see them interact with the McGees more.
That first episode was such a good introduction for them, but then they just kind of slip into the background.
It's a shame because I like Molly and Ollie's chemistry, and they were a cute couple. But I will say, it makes up for the fact that the human stories, with Scratch being more of the driving force behind certain parts, or just put in the background entirely, or, made a secondary character, were very compelling. Kudos to the fact that they, like, it's interesting. Disney will allow shows to talk about stuff like periods and characters exploring and identifying themselves in their own culture or dealing with deadbeat dads. It's just interesting how whatever the movie studio and the TV studio side of Disney are willing to allow, because the period episode, it's a coming of age story, and it becomes more about how Molly thinks, because she, well, hasn't had hers yet, that she is going to be left behind because of Andrea and Libby are more closer connected and such, and how Molly does not feel fully connected with her Thai family heritage. They explore some places, and I think that's very cool that the creators were allowed to do this, because there was a time period where you were not allowed to talk about this kind of stuff, or they would have to imply it in a different way.
I like how standards and practices have become either standards and practices have become more loose with allowing these topics to be discussed, or culturally we're just becoming less taboo, especially the period piece episode.
It's the fact that Disney is so friggin' afraid to not be Disney at all times. They have to be Disney. They have to represent a certain image of being like, we're family. But it would be smart for any creative studio that makes stuff like TVs and shows not have to try to skirt or walk around certain topics. Like, how cool is it that Molly gets to have like her own like self-identifying journey of how she feels being part Thai and disconnected from her family and her history?
That's one of the best episodes because they get to explore deeper themes like that. And also, the music is in that episode specifically just a banger.
It is. And I think my favorite episode, in terms of just pure storytelling, is Libby having to deal with the fact that her dad is the worst. It's like usually with these deadbeat dad stories, there's a lot of famous ones. There's Adventure Time talks about it. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air has a very famous episode. But it always seems like there's always just that one archetypical story of how you talk about this stuff. Libby's dad, on the other hand, is not so much a traditional deadbeat. He's chasing after fame over wanting to be with his daughter and wife.
It's the more nuanced approach to the deadbeat dad narrative, because he's not necessarily abusive in terms of like physical abuse. I don't think he's divorced in this episode. They don't really make that very clear. But the fact that he has been gone for 6 years on this journey around the world, the only time he gets to see Libby is for, I think, at most, probably like an hour.
For an hour, and even then, he's still on his phone instead of putting 100% of his time with Libby. Then he's just like, oh no, we're going to make this book and it's going to be a franchise, a trilogy, so I'm not going to be able to see you again. Bye. That's a very specific kind of deadbeat dad. You sometimes see this in like cooking competition shows, like on Chopped or whatever, where there will be a chef who's like, yeah, I have a wife and two kids, but I put my career over them, and I think they'll understand. And it's just like,
No.
no, buddy. It's such a distinct and very grounded way to tackle such a topic. And it doesn't like ruin Libby or anything like that. She's not like she is destroyed by the fact that her dad is just not interested, but she finds solace in the fact that she has her family still and her mom, and of course, Molly, and to an extent, Scratch. A lot of this also has to do with the fact that Laura Jill Miller is just such a good voice actor for Libby. She brings so much weight to that episode.
She does. I also want to give a shout out to Pamela Adlon for voicing Libby's mom. You can tell how old we are because we grew up with Pamela Adlon voicing a bunch of child characters. Now she's evolving in her career.
A lot of 90s kids would know Miller from Digimon as Kairi, or more modern audiences would know her from the Loud House movie as Lisa, or Haru from Beastars, or so many other multiple characters from OKKO. Like, this cast is very good. I love the voice cast for this show, and it's full of relatively new people to voice work, and some of the legends on here, like Ashley Burch is great as Molly. Dana Snyder is like so good as Scratch, and throughout this whole season is able to actually be more than just an obnoxious foodie. He doesn't have to be the worst person in the room like he has to be with Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Like, Dana can act, like all these people can act in this show gave them great substantial roles to do so. It's like some of the other voice actors do a great job, like Jordan Klepper, Michaela Dietz, and Sumali Montano are also really good. Eric Edelstein as Jeff, just wonderful. And of course, you have the usual, the Ghost Council being voiced by Gray Griffin, Kerry Washington, Greg Baldwin, and the always great, along with the others, John DiMaggio. And Tom Kenny shows up from time to time in this season. And some of the funniest jokes I got were from Patty, the elderly woman voiced by Jennifer Lewis.
Yes.
I think one of my favorite jokes, or just like out of nowhere gags, was Andrea being like, "Yeah, sometimes I Photoshop people. Like, Patty pays me to Photoshop her with longer legs for some reason." And then it cuts to Patty being like, "Who has short legs now, Linda?" But let's talk about the comedy for this show, because I know some will probably say Gravity Falls is funnier. I think on a pure comedy level, The Ghost and Molly Magee is the funniest Disney cartoon that they have right now.
I would agree with that. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the musical sequences, too. I think this time they got to be a little bit sillier in both the variety of like music genres, but also there's always going to be like little bits of humor that are like squeezed into some of these sequences that just kill me.
There's a lot of variety of humor, physical gags, dialogue gags, puns, background gags. Every episode still has a bird dying in it. I am amazed how they were able to respond to that from our interview with the two creators. I think they found it amusing. I asked, "Do y'all have something against birds?" I think one of my favorite little quick gags is when Molly is about to journey into Scratch's mind. And Scratch is like, "There's a lot of complex, nuanced things going on in there." And it cuts to his brain just going like, "I like tacos." It's got a great energized vibe to its humor. And there's always like a great expression, good physical comedy, snappy animation. Mercury Filmworks, man, they do such good either animation rigs or just they were able to make these characters so expressive. These might be some of Disney's most expressive characters.
Mercury Filmworks really pulled out all the stops.
Everyone was able to be silly and funny. It's not just, oh, this character gets to be the funniest one. No, everyone, I think, has a funny joke here and there. I love in the final episode where they learn about Scratch's actual origin, where Pete is just like, "So, Scratch, how did you, And then Sharon just walks in. "Okay, tag me in. Scratch, how did you die?" Thank you, dear. For these kind of shows to work, you have to have good characters. You have to have a reason why we stay around for not only the story and the characters, but also the comedy. Like, there are some forms of comedy where you are able just to be like, yeah, just let the characters be placeholders for the comedy to carry it and such.
The reason why that works is because if you're familiar with these characters, like you get to know them on a deep level, that make the more sillier antics they go like embark on, stealing a soda from the principal's safe in their office,
Right.
or Molly's 24-hour no fear curse.
That's such a good episode. I love the punchline of Scratch being like, ha-ha, the curse is over. I made sure you weren't going to do this extremely dangerous thing. Then Molly's like, wow, man, I was going to do something dangerous. But one thing about that, your clock is going fast. I still have 15 seconds. And then she just launches herself in the air. It's so funny. It's just a bundle of joy every episode. I even love some of the smaller jokes, like when the mayor, once again voiced by Patton Oswalt, thinks that he was victorious over a mega corporation from building a new mega store, your Walmart or your Best Buys or whatever. And then he's just like, oh, well, I guess there wasn't anything in the law that said they couldn't technically build something 8 feet outside of Brighton. It's so fun to watch this show. Every episode has something funny in it.
And not just that, but the other thing about having strong characters is the show is very funny, but when it gets emotional, that's when those scenes cut deep.
Really, a lot of the best emotional moments come from like the some of the individual episodes, like the period piece, sleepover, the Libby and her dad. And there's one episode we're going to talk about because, but it's mostly because of how this one season has built up Scratch as a character. So I guess let's talk about Scratch. So first, with the first season, Scratch is the foil to Molly as much as Molly is the foil to Scratch. Not a lot of that changed throughout that first season, and we see them grow and bond and be actually wanting to be with one another and work off of one another. Like, I love the body swap episode where Scratch goes like, you know what they do in those stories. It absolutely 100% works out every single time. They work off of each other so well as a great comedy duo. And even then, that one punchline at the end of the episode where they body swap and the kid in the play cannot act. And they're just like, oh, right. This is why she was never chosen to be the lead actor. Yep. By the introduction of the second episode, they drop a little breadcrumb for the audience where Scratch picks up a strawberry soda and remembers something, something from his past. And I remember when I saw that, I was like, oh, what are you telling us, show? What are you getting us ready to see? What did you think about Scratch's journey throughout this whole season? Like, starting from here to where we end up.
Scratch's arc in this season really recontextualizes a lot of his arc from the first season, but I'll expand more on this in a second. But I think this arc just really, it really does a good job of giving Scratch more rounded personality, and it just deepens his character. We start with the soda episode. There's another one where Scratch has his ghostly form is all bubbly, a nice tie to the soda. And this is the
Right.
one where Molly goes into his subconscious.
Exactly. So with this episode, it's like the first time we are actually able to dive into Scratch as a character, where he's hiding away something extremely special or something very specific in the back of his mind. And no, it's not the fact that he likes tacos. That's just a part of everyone's personality and mind. We all like tacos. And how dwelling on it or remembering it makes him nervous about what's going to happen, about what he's going to remember, or who he was as a person, and feeling alone again. And after that, we see him grow as a character. He's more helpful. He's the best part about season two with Scratch, with his overarching story, is that he's able to bond more and interact with more characters, because sooner or later, Scratch was going to have to start interacting with the other townsfolk, or, in general, just the family members and such.
Yeah, I really like how in this season, Scratch starts to form more of a bond with Daryl. Like, the one episode that I like is where Daryl, for a day, become a ghost to do his own thing while his body pretty much is at his whim.
I like the period piece episode where Scratch and Pete go to the store to basically reenact or do the bit where Baymax in the Big Hero 6 miniseries goes to get period products. And just the utter like nervousness, like they want to do a good job, but they have no idea what they are doing. So they just like take all of them off the shelf, and then Scratch uses this as an opportunity to work off of Pete and be like, you know what? You should give him some food, like just peanut butter ice cream with chocolate bits inside. And it's like, isn't that your favorite ice cream? He's like, Pete, are you honestly willing to let Molly and Libby go through this without some food? I just don't know if that's such a good idea. That Pete's like, oh, okay, yeah, no, this is for them. We gotta do this. Then Scratch is like, okay, good. Now let's go get those French bread pizzas, the fancy ones. Seeing him grow, become more accepting of stuff like Jeff, but also like during that episode where he thinks he's ditching Jeff for another Jeff, the payoff of that is great when you, of course, find out that Jeff and Jeff are seeing each other. But he's actually like worried about breaking the heart of Jeff when in season one, Scratch is all about like, I want nothing to do with Jeff. But in the second season, he's like, Jeff is my best friend.
There's
Like
another
he.
character we're reintroduced to in this episode, our main antagonist for the season, Jinx.
She was a little annoying. I mean, of course, she was meant to be. And meant to be this sinister individual. Yeah, voiced by Liza Koshy. Seeing them work off of one another and just how, like, Liza holds on to the toxic traits that Scratch had, while Scratch very much let go of them. Once again, it's the power dynamic between the two. Jinx is still vitriolic and spiteful, while Scratch is more wholesome and endearing to the world and to the ghosts now that he is in charge of the whole ghost realm.
Scratch being the new chairman this season doesn't sit well with Jinx. And I will say, like, as an antagonist, she can be a little bit one note where she is just way too obsessed with the one true chairman. That does lead to some fun episodes with her, like the one where Scratch gets jinxed and he can only break that curse if she says his name 3 times.
Right, that was a funny episode. One of the things that unfortunately I had spoiled for me when I was trying to avoid looking up stuff for this show was the fact that every once in a while in the human world, they would drop in this random character. He just was there. Nothing very important, but the show made sure to give you just a quick enough glimpse of who he was to make you be like, huh. What an interesting background character they keep introducing. And he kind of looks like Scratch by the final episode after they take down Jinx and make sure that she is no longer ever a threat. We cut to the final episode where, like, Scratch tries to do one of his own little give him yummy food schemes where he keeps jumping into the bodies of the people who, after they got their funnel cakes. And then he jumps into that one background character we see throughout the whole season, and something goes awry. He starts remembering a ton of things. All the memories and details that are hinted at throughout the whole show from this season, hit you all at once. It's like, okay, so we find out who this person from, like during the literal bottle episode. What is it with Disney shows that have a metaphorical and literal bottle episode? Like, first, a show made by the Phineas and Ferb guys.
Hamster and Gretel.
Yeah, Hamster and Gretel has that one great literal bottle episode with Richard Kind. And now this one has them going into Scratch's mind, which is a cardboard ship inside a bottle throughout a majority of that episode. And we find out that Scratch knew a human from the past, Adia. So it's like they try to reach out to her. She's become this big, influential adventurer type person, and she knows who Scratch was. And you find out that Scratch isn't even Scratch's real name,
Just a nickname.
because she would remember Scratch would scratch his arms when he became nervous. But by the halfway of the final episode, you find out that Scratch had an actual human form. That the human that we see throughout that whole season, him. And yeah, you find out that Scratch isn't really a ghost. He's a wraith, or the soul of a human named Todd Mortensen. Then comes the most heartbreaking song out of the entire show, probably out in throughout a lot of Disney's history of with their shows and films having music. And it's all sung by the guy who voices Master Shake, about a guy who feels like he wasted his life away because he could not take those two steps to go onward to adventure, to be his friend Adia, where they would. It's like kind of a reverse up situation, except nobody dies. Adia became the great adventurer, but Scratch was too nervous to take that first step and did nothing exciting or thrilling in his life.
To the point where he became dead inside.
Yeah, metaphorically and literally dead inside, which that's such a last minute thing to introduce into this show with the ghost lore, that some people could literally not be dead, but their souls have just left them. But you know, whatever, production issues aside, it works for what happens, because after a while, like, yeah, you do have to embrace it and take those first steps, because life is only so short. Or again, from Masaaki Yuasa's The Night is Short, Walk On Girl, well, the night is short, walk on. It then becomes a journey of just like Scratch has to reunite with his body and just go out there. Don't be this sad sack. Don't be this worrywart or whatever. Just go.
This is what I mean when I say that the end is kind of the perfect finale to wrap up the story that began in the very first episode of the series. Because the whole, as it turns out, this whole show has been about Scratch, or I guess Todd, learning to embrace life, to meet new friends, to try new things. To not be afraid to live.
It works both ways. Scratch and Molly get to learn to do that, because it literally starts with Molly being like optimistic but nervous about moving into another new town and having to essentially restart her life. The parallel of the Molly and Scratch story work very well, even though we've again talked about how this was meant to be for the final season. Well, they said there was supposed to be a third season, and then unfortunately, viewership didn't come through, and they had to wrap it all up with like one final episode. So, yes, on a technical level, I wish they had a little more time to make this work. Like, even just doing like a small 6-episode season. But the emotional core of that finale works so well. And I don't want to hear some smug son of a gun that ruins film discourse by saying, like, well, Adia is able to do that because, and Todd are able to do that because they have money. And it's like, yeah, no kidding. Nobody cares about realism in this show.
Exactly.
It's about a little girl who befriends a ghost and helps change the ghost world and the human town that she lives in through the help of Master Shake. It works where it needs to. It's a wonderful finale, despite the technical hiccups, which is something that feels like this a lot of Disney shows from this generation have had to deal with, unfortunately. Well, I guess one thing I feel like I need to ask. Did Scratch, I guess, forget about everyone else when he got back into his body? Like, did they explain that? I feel like I missed that part where Todd is going like off to adventures to travel the world to and reunite with Adia, but he doesn't remember anyone.
I
Like,
feel like they wanted to keep that open-ended because it seems like at first, like when he's walking up to the bus stop, that he's forgotten all of the people he's encountered. But the last thing he says to Molly is like, "Thanks, Moll."
it's so sweet, and you get to see in the credits him traveling and reuniting with Adia at the end. I wish we got to see more of Adia. I mean, granted, I am sure we were going to, but it sucks with what happens with production to where she's just kind of not much of a character outside of representing what Todd was not. Outgoing, brave, kind. And Todd was nervous, homebound, the exact opposite. So, but seeing the two together at the end did make me smile. Like, it's a genuinely good ending for the show.
That final moment is so precious.
This was a great show. And luckily, the duo behind the show are pitching new shows and such. But I wish we got a third season of this. And I know some people are like, what if we campaign really hard, like Kim Possible did back in the mid-2000s? And it's like, that is way easier said than done now in our current climate, because back then we did not have social media. And even though we all know Kim Possible was a very big show, but it was like big, like Metallica at their prime. With like wide audience recognition, big. It's impossible to get that now, which sucks because of how studios, or at least the executives who run studios, have no idea how to cultivate audiences anymore. They just hope for the best and then expect all of us to do the back work of keeping these shows alive by watching them. And we parrot this that you have to support it. But I also know that it's absurdly tough to do so, where we have to, just like the climate episode of The Ghost of Molly Magee, stand together to make change. And we would all have to stand together to make Disney say, hey, give us an actual proper season three. And just say the actual final episode was that one episode. So you could technically not have to make more episodes. But, you know.
It's unfortunate the climate that we're in right now with television and streaming being in a very precarious state, but things aren't what they used to be. So for now, I'm just glad that the show existed at all. I'm glad that despite there not being a third season, Bill and Bob at least got to end the series and tie things up on their own terms.
No, exactly. I agree. Not all shows are actually given that. R.I.P. Glitch Techs. Doesn't mean that you can't round up a bunch of people and say, hey, watch this show continuously, because we're going to have to start doing that with the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur premiere. If you love this show, support it, watch it multiple times, get those viewer numbers up. And then when Moon Girl drops on Disney Plus or on TV, get those numbers going. Really, you cannot slack off with this, because even the creators are like, hey, hopefully we get a third season.
I hope it's not too late and that Disney hasn't already made their decision. But yeah, now is the time to really support your favorite ongoing Disney shows so that they aren't at the risk of cancellation.
The thing that I've loved about the creative teams at Disney's animation studios, I love that they have a different vibe to them that feels like they're still at home with Disney, but they have their own flair. honestly, it helps the company stand out more. So, The Ghost of Molly McGee was just a great show. Definitely one of my favorites from 2021, and definitely one of my favorites. I hope all the creatives and talented people that worked on this show get to make more stuff because, boy, the animation industry kind of needs it right now. So.
I concur with you that The Ghost of Molly McGee is it's just a delightful show from start to finish. One of the funniest shows they've ever made, and probably one of the funniest Disney works, period, since The Emperor's New Groove.
Exactly. Now, give it a watch. I think you'll love it. It's one of those shows that was able to perfectly balance out story of the week plot lines while still having a good overarching narrative. Just because it's over doesn't mean it's, over.
Exactly. Now, anything you can tease for next time before we wrap this one up?
Well, we're going back to doing another stacked episode because we will be talking about The Tiger's Apprentice, Orion in the Dark, and the full season one of the highly loved and yet also extremely polarizing Has Been Hotel.
I'm both excited and nervous to talk about that, only because the fan base is passionate, to say the least.
There's a way to describe it, like to use passionate as a both a pro and a con with that fan base. I am so conflicted with that show, and not because of the fan base, but just because of the creatives behind it and what we actually got after 5 years of waiting for this show to become a thing. But you can hear about that next time.
And until then, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at BlueSky at CamsEyeView. I also have a website called CamsEyeView.biz where I review animated films and shows from around the world called The Other Side of Animation. I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/CamsEyeView. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on various social media at CaptainK42. You guys can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and That Place at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube on Podchaser. Consider supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. You can escape, so do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.